Radar forecast. WGCH brings you up-to-the-minute weather 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
We're looking at sunshine, a nice afternoon. The high is 52 degrees. Tonight, we're looking at cloudy skies out ahead of a cold front and a low-pressure system coming out of the Great Lakes. That's going to give us a low tonight of about 47 degrees, and we'll have some rain coming with that system starting around dawn tomorrow morning. This is meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans for 1490 WGCH.
Around the House with Steve Gladstone on Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 is jam-packed with important information, preventative maintenance, and all sorts of home tips to keep your house in great shape and your family safe. We have special guests on heating, cooling, environmental issues, and we make it fun with trivia contests and prizes. Don't let that home fall apart around you. Join us Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 on Around the House with Steve Gladstone on 1490 WGCH.
The opinions expressed in our talk shows are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio. And now, the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour on 1490 WGCH.
Good afternoon, Greenwich. This is Beth O'Malley at the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour on WGCH 1490. Be well with Beth. I am here today with Hillary Stark. She's the Associate Director of Greenwich Education Group's College Consulting Team, and she's been assisting high school students with prep for college since 2008. Welcome, Hillary.
Thank you, Beth. It's great to be here.
It's really nice to have you here today, and I was sharing with you earlier, and I've shared on the air before, that I have a senior daughter who is over at Greenwich High School. So we've just finished the college app. There's a word for what that...
The common application.
Yes, the common application. And she has gotten it out to 5 schools.
Good for her.
Yep. One early action, one early decision, and so that would be 3 regular. And I think she has a bunch more to go that require some additional essays, so those will be down the pike. What we're going to do today is talk about the process of applying to college from that process starts junior year, leading into senior year, and then headed off to college, and all of the different aspects of that, including stress and what children and parents both are facing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what I wanted to do is start a little bit with your background. You are helping both parents and children with their process with the application, but also with getting ready for test prep, correct?
Well, yes. I don't personally work on test prep, but absolutely when students come in, particularly in their junior year, which is the year that most students at least begin taking standardized tests, we do have at Greenwich Education Group, which is one of the reasons why I'm here, because I can offer this to my clients, an entire division called Academic Services that not only does tutoring for academic classes, but also does prep for both the ACT and the SAT. One of the smart things to do as a junior, and we can get into more depth on this later if you like, but one of the very smart things to do when you're beginning the process of deciding which test to take, it's not always obvious, and I don't think most students know what test is best for them.
Right.
The best way to really figure out which is the proper test is to actually take a diagnostic. And that's something that we offer at Greenwich Education Group. You come in for a Saturday morning, and you sit and you take a chunk of both the SAT and the ACT.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And what you get at the end is not only something that will show you which one was the better test for you, but will also show you, it digs down, and you can really see sort of question by question which types of questions are hardest for you, which you do well on, so that when you do decide to do some prep, you can provide the tutor with this diagnostic test, and that tutor can really sort of formulate the prep around how you did on the diagnostic. So,
and then typically, a junior or a senior, once they know which is the better test for the way that they test and how they've learned, the focus is primarily on that test, and you forget about the other test. So you don't need to study for both.
Absolutely not. Thank you for actually pointing that out, because that's a really important point. There are so many people, especially parents of our generation, who grew up really only knowing one of the two tests.
Yeah.
If they grew up in the Northeast and the West Coast, they just knew the SAT. If they grew up in the middle of the country, they knew the ACT. And they don't recognize that colleges truly, truly couldn't care less which of the two they receive. They don't want both. They just want to see one.
Oh, that's so interesting. Because when my daughter first started reading about them, and at that point I think she had taken one, she came to me and she said, I think that I would be able to achieve a higher score if I really focus on the ACT. And I looked at her like she had four heads.
Right.
Because I only know the SAT. Right. And what's this ACT? And what if it's not as important?
Right.
And
right.
And why would she think she would do better on that? And sure enough, lo and behold, that is the test
And she did do better.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It is a very different type of test. Now, I think it's changed a little bit. The SAT has now revamped their test. This is the first year, really, that students have experienced the new SAT. The reason they did it was because there are more students now taking the ACT in this country than the SAT for the first time. And they realized that to stay competitive, they had to turn themselves at least a bit more into an ACT-type test. The jury's still out. There haven't been enough tests taken to really know. But if you look historically at the difference between the ACT and the SAT, the ACT seems to have been, at least in the past, the type of test that students really, it's based on their knowledge. It's based on the things that they've learned in school. The hard part about the ACT is that you really have to move fairly quickly through it to finish it.
Okay.
But the students seem to feel that the questions are quote unquote easier. And I think it's mostly because they recognize them. There really aren't any trick questions on the ACT. Whereas in the past, the SAT was frankly meant, I believe, to trick students.
And
a much harder type of test. And you really had to have or have to have a certain type of mind to be successful, I think, at the SAT. So most students began to feel that the ACT was a stronger test, which is why it's now become more popular.
I got it. I have a question. Why do the kids make fun of me when I say, oh, that's an SAT word? And they say, Mom, there's no such thing anymore. I don't understand. What are they talking about? That was a big deal when I was a kid in the
80s. It was such a big deal. Learning vocabulary and learning similes and metaphors and all those types of things that we had to study with flashcards. That doesn't exist anymore. They don't have to study vocabulary. I think they still probably should know what words mean, because within the reading comprehension sections of the SAT, you'll see phrases that if you don't know what a word means, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, sure.
But basically, I think instead of doing what we used to do, which was actually study vocabulary words,
right,
the best way to study for an SAT English section now, or reading comprehension section, is really to read. It's truly the one and only way to really prepare over the course of years for taking a reading comprehension section. I think once you get closer, and one of the things we do in prep to practice is you practice reading comprehension passages, and you kind of get into the rhythm of the types of questions that are asked and how they're phrased. And that's what prep is all about on that, for that part of the SAT or ACT, frankly.
And I hope that I'm remembering this correctly, but Dr. Craig Olin is he's a physician in town who is a concierge doctor and happened to be a childhood friend of mine. And I remember, I'm pretty sure it was Dr. Olin, but we called him Craig back in those days. He was taking Latin. And his vocab scores were off the charts because of the... But nowadays, taking Latin wouldn't necessarily help your score, or...
That's an interesting question. I can't actually come out and say it wouldn't. I think taking Latin is something that will help your vocabulary in general, and helping your vocabulary in general helps you understand reading better.
Right.
So
sure.
I don't think that there's a downside to taking Latin if it's something a student wants to take. But I also don't think that it's a panacea. I don't think it's a magic pill. And I don't think that it's necessary to take Latin to learn vocabulary anymore.
And to get into a good school.
And to get into a good school.
All right, good. Now, what I wanted to ask is, in terms of you have not been in this field forever.
Not forever, no.
No, you started, well, I don't know that you started there, but you were vice president at Lehman Brothers.
Yes.
And you live right here in Greenwich. Your BA is from Wellesley College, and you have an MBA from Harvard Business School. Mm-hmm. So wonderful credentials. And in terms of having you in our community, it's such a gift to the children here who can study then with you for the ACT, SAT, but also really looking at all of the different schools available and what is a good fit for them.
Right.
And my understanding is you have two children of your own who have been through the Greenwich system, through Greenwich High School, Riverside.
Riverside, Eastern Middle, and Greenwich High School. Yeah, yeah, both of them.
And now one is graduated from?
One graduated in 2014 from Georgetown. And I have my younger son is a junior at MIT.
Wonderful. Great.
So, yeah.
So were you working with them on their process?
Interestingly, my eldest son, like your daughter, did not want me to see his essay. Uh-huh. So I never, until he got into college, I did not get to read his essay. My younger son, I worked with him more directly on his essay. Having said that, one of the things I feel quite strongly about is that parents not work with their students on the essay.
I've heard that.
I don't have a problem with them reviewing the essay at the end of the process and maybe making some comments if they feel strongly about something. But one thing that all parents need to be very, very cognizant of is that colleges really, truly know when an adult's hand has been on an essay. Yeah. We at Greenwich Education Group work very hard not to write student essays.
Right, right.
We don't. We work on the editing process only.
Yep.
We also work on discussing with the student what we call brainstorming with the student, topics and ideas and things that we think would be, you know, best for the student to write about. We don't think about what the college is looking for. What we really think about is what the student wants to write about, because that's really what colleges want to see. The purpose of the essay is to learn about these students, to really get the measure of their personalities. It's not to see that they created, you know, some terrific project and they're the president of every club. That's not the point of the essay. The essay is to really get to know who this student is and would this student fit in with XYZ College. And the only person who can write that essay is truly the student.
Right, exactly.
And it really shows when there's been a parent hand on an essay. And if I can see it, the colleges can see it. And that's the last thing you want, is for a college admissions officer to be reading an essay knowing that it was written by somebody else.
Exactly. The other common mistake that I've seen in my practice with kids who are working on their applications is they will go to too many adults. So a parent, a teacher, an aunt, a grandparent, and before you know it, you have four different points of view feeding into the child, and the child comes into my office completely stressed out because everyone thinks differently.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
really, truly, the essay should be the child's thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
Not those four adults.
That's so true, and that happens so often, even with my clients who I've talked to their parents, but the student is nervous and feels, I've got to get every opinion that I can get. I have to know that this is the perfect essay before I hit send, and
yes,
the only way I can know is to show it to my English teacher, to my guidance counselor,
right,
to my grandmother who used to work for a magazine.
Right.
To, you know, so
yeah,
so it does. That happens a lot, and it does cause a lot of stress. And at the end of the day, and I've said this to many students and their parents, the essay, the best essay is the essay that feels and sounds the most genuine, not the one that's necessarily the most brilliantly written. It really just has to have your personality shine through. And sometimes that can be a very quirky essay. It doesn't have to be polished. In fact, it really shouldn't be too polished. It needs to sound like a 17-year-old.
Right.
And I work very hard to convince everybody that that's really the best approach, because it's sometimes hard to believe that that's really what they want.
Right.
But it truly, truly is what the colleges want to see.
So actually, our children who are not showing us are their essays, and as I said, my daughter's already applied to five schools, and I've never seen the essay.
I think that's great.
So that's actually
that's great.
The way to go.
Yes.
All right.
So you should pat yourself on the back for not pushing her to show you the essay.
I think Jacqueline would tell you I pushed her. She's very determined. When she has an idea, that's the way it's going to be. So, all right. Tell me, there are different types of essays. On the Common App, there's one primary essay, but there are other essays. Can you explain that?
Sure. So there are over 800 colleges that use the Common App. They don't all, but so many of them do that it usually is the primary focus of most students, especially around here, applying to colleges. And the main essay, the personal statement, as it's called, on the Common App, goes to 95% of the colleges that are on the Common App. So it's 650 words. It's pretty long. And it is the essay that really is the first thing that I think a student should focus on, because it will take the longest and it will be seen by the most eyes, by the most colleges. So again, primarily, first thing you do is work on that essay. Come up with ideas for it. There are five questions. You get to choose from one of five questions on the Common App.
Oh, there are five prompt questions for the one essay.
Yes.
Yes.
They change. These last 2 years, they've been exactly the same. That doesn't necessarily mean next year they'll be the same questions.
Okay.
There's a lot of input, I believe, from colleges about what questions they want to see. And the one question that was taken off several years ago, which I think made everybody unhappy, was write whatever you want to write.
Oh.
And that was taken off. So now you really do have to answer one of the five questions.
Okay.
And it is very important to answer one of the five questions. Now, the way I like to work is to let the students kind of look through the questions, but then write about whatever they want to write about. And then we make sure that it fits one of the questions. We don't force it the other way, where that they look at a question and say, okay, I have to answer this question, I'm going to write to the question. We do it the reverse. They write the way they want to write. They write as many words as they want to write, because we can always edit it down. And then we say, okay, which question does this answer? And if it doesn't really answer any of them, how do we tweak it to make sure that it does? Because the colleges do want to see that you can follow instructions. So they do actually want to see that you've answered a question that's been asked. So that's the main essay that goes to all the colleges. Then many colleges, particularly the most selective colleges, have what are called supplements, which are short answer, usually about 250 words. Sometimes they're questions that the colleges want answered. Many times the question is, why do you want to come to this school?
Yes, yeah.
Which the students find quite frustrating, and I understand that, because everybody knows that they're applying to multiple schools. So, you know, why does a college need to know why they're the number one school? Well, I think from the college's standpoint, they just want to know that you've done some research on the school.
Exactly, yep.
Right? So that's what the students really have to do. For the most part, they've gone to visit these schools. But even if they haven't been able to, and there are times when you can't get to a school that you're going to apply to, and that's okay. We're very lucky that the internet now exists.
Yes.
Which it didn't in our day.
Yeah.
And you can do lots of research on every school you're applying to. So when you're going to answer the question, why do you want to come to our wonderful school, you really do need to come up with specific reasons why, by going online, by checking out the curriculum and different courses that might interest you and mentioning them in the essay, by looking at the clubs and activities that they have at the school and mentioning them, by talking about the location of the school.
Right.
That could be an important topic, too. It's interesting. You do have to weigh that a little bit. There's some schools that will say, you know, we know that you want to come to school here because it's in this wonderful town, but please don't spend 250 words talking about the town.
Yes.
And then there are other schools that say, we are our town.
Right.
So do your research as a student. You know, work on sort of getting the sense of what the school thinks of themselves, and then write about what appeals to you about each school. And it is frustrating because you have to write that same darn answer
for every school.
For almost every school. And the answers have to be somewhat different.
And nowadays, what's the average number of schools that a child graduating in Greenwich is applying to?
I would say it's anywhere between 8 on the low end, and 20 is really high. I would say more like 16, although I've had students apply to 20. Now, when you apply to the University of California, for instance, they're not on the Common App. They have their own application, but it's one application for all the UC schools.
Okay.
So you can apply to a multitude of those schools, and that counts as, you know, the number you're applying to, but it's one application.
Got it.
All okay. You're doing is checking a box to see which school it goes to.
All right, good. Well, we have a few more topics around college and college applications that I'd like to get to.
Great.
Describing extracurriculars, a little more about the standardized testing. What we're going to do is just take a break. This is Beth O'Malley at Be Well with Beth on the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour, WGCH 1490 or WGCH.com anywhere.
From the WGCH Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans with your Doppler weather radar forecast. WGCH brings you up-to-the-minute weather 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
We're looking at sunshine, a nice afternoon. The high is 52 degrees. Tonight, we're looking at cloudy skies out ahead of a cold front and a low-pressure system coming out of the Great Lakes. That's going to give us a low tonight of about 47 degrees, and we'll have some rain coming with that system starting around dawn tomorrow morning. This is meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans for 1490 WGCH.
This is Margaret Welsh of Greenwich Library. With the ever-increasing cost of tuition, can you afford to put your children through college? While there are many different ways to finance higher education, parents often feel like they need to choose between risking their retirement and burying their children in debt. If this sounds familiar, you should attend How to Pay for College Without Bankrupting You or Your Children. Presented by CCPS financial planner Sean Flynn, this class will explore topics such as applying for financial aid sources and working with financial aid offices, saving for college and finding colleges that fit your budget, alternative payment options, and so much more. This program will take place Thursday, December 1st at 6 p.m. in the second floor meeting room of the main library. Registration is highly encouraged. Please visit the library's event calendar at www.greenwichlibrary.org to register. I'm Margaret Walsh of Greenwich Library on 1490 WGCH.
Good afternoon. This is Beth O'Malley at Be Well with Beth at the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour on WGCH 1490 or WGCH.com anywhere. I am here today with Hillary Stark from the Greenwich Education Group, and I would like to give you a call-in number so that if anyone has any specific questions related to standardized testing or the college application process, that you may call at any point during the show until 3 o'clock. And that number is 203-661-5051, 203-661-5051. Hillary, I really appreciate your being here today. It's so beneficial to have this conversation. And I can tell you, as a mom of a junior last year, going into this process, I was completely overwhelmed. I would say, actually, my stress level may have been greater than my daughter's around the college application process. And there was this feeling of, how do I know where I'm supposed to take her? First of all, she's in a lot of advanced courses and AP. How do I take her out of school to even go visit while school is in session? And I know you're allowed to do that, but you don't feel right keeping your child out of class or missing an exam. And I ended up doing a lot of our tours in the summer, which I have to tell you, I know that's not what you're supposed to do, is what you always hear, but we loved it. And we got to tour so many campuses during the summer. And it was sitting in the classes that those colleges offered and universities offered where we learned what they're looking for in their supplemental. So when they ask the question, why this college, they actually, in the information course, would tell you what not to say and what they wanted to hear. And that alone was invaluable.
Right. So I thank you for bringing that up. I think that's absolutely right, that whatever chance you get, even if it's in the summer, to visit college campuses, you should just go if you can. Now, again, not everybody is able or flexible or can afford to go visit college campuses. But if you can, certainly ones that are close to where you live are very easy to get to. I highly recommend it. It's really the only way for a parent and a student to truly understand what it would feel like to be a student on that campus, to be living on that campus. And really, sometimes it's the first time some of these students have even seen a college campus.
Exactly.
Right. So I think it's imperative that they get a chance to at least experience walking around and sitting in the wherever they can grab a bite to eat and reading the school paper. That's something I would definitely pick up when
yes.
I was there.
Yeah.
Students hate it when their parents stop strangers and ask questions. but sometimes that's not such a bad thing either. You get to know the type of student that's on campus. And yes, it's okay to go in the summer if that's really the only chance you get to go. I like to recommend going during spring break. Our spring break, at least in Greenwich, it usually does not coincide with college school breaks, or at least not most of them.
Correct.
So that's what I usually suggest junior year. Sometimes even winter break, students, if they would like. I mean, it's the middle of winter, so you might want to go someplace that's warm. But February, or the public schools anyway, February and April, and the private schools March, although sometimes that coincides with college break, but not always, are good opportunities to start that college viewing process. I don't ever recommend taking a student out of class to go see a to go visit a college. I don't recommend that at all junior year.
Oh, good.
I don't think that's a smart use of time. As I do say to our clients, the number one priority junior year above everything else is school. Junior year is the most important year. The transcript is the most important item that colleges are looking at. So you really don't want to take time away from your studies or from your classes. There are long weekends throughout the year that are sprinkled throughout the year that you can take and to go visit some schools that aren't too far away. But to take that long trip, I would definitely not do it during the school time.
I was amazed how many schools we could actually see in one day. And I know that I'm a little ambitious, but we got to, on a couple of days, 3 to 4 schools and did the complete tours and took the class and the information session. And I found that to be really beneficial because I only had to book 2 nights at the hotel and we could still get in a number of classes. And it was amazing to me that my daughter's perception of a school based on that experience versus my perception, it's very individualized. Mm-hmm. What appealed to her was quite different than what appealed to me.
So that is exactly what usually happens, which is why you both need to be on the
right.
tour.
Yeah.
But one thing that I would caution about seeing too many schools on a single day, and I don't know if this happened to you or not, but they seem to blend together. It starts to get a little tough to remember
yes.
where you were when somebody said one thing and
right.
where you were when somebody said another, or if you ran into somebody on one campus and which campus was it. And so I always advise, no matter actually how many campuses anyone sees in one day, to take good notes.
Right.
Just jot down. And you don't have to spend hours writing things down. But once you're back in the car, sit down and think about what you liked about that school and, frankly, what you didn't like about that school.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things I like to do after a student has visited colleges and they come back to see me is to hear what they didn't like. Why was that school not appealing to you? Sometimes the reasons can be because the buildings are old.
Yeah.
And that is a factor. You know, if that's something that really will bother you, going to a school where the buildings are fairly run down, then you need to think about that when you're applying to colleges.
Right.
But for the most part, I think it's finding yourself in an environment that you can see yourself spending 4 years in.
Right.
There's so many different types of environments. I think you've probably learned this yourself at this point. There are big universities with tens of thousands of students wandering around. They're very small colleges way in some rural neck of the woods that can feel very isolating to some. But to others, it's exactly what they want. And the only way you're going to know that is to actually step foot on the campus and see how you feel when you're there.
Yep. Freshman, sophomore, and junior year, we were only thinking about a city like New York City. Mm. And then we started touring in the second school we saw. The first one was in New York. The second one we saw was rural in Maine, mm-hmm. very small campus, not more than maybe 4,000 students. And we fell in love with it. Mm-hmm. And that would never in a million years on paper would I have said that's a place that I could see one of my children. But I would love to see one of them there. So it's so interesting until you're really on the campus. There's so exactly. many different factors. And what we did is we took extensive notes. I typed the notes during the information session, but then we always took pictures. We took pictures throughout the campus of her with different expressions on her face. So that helped to
That's great.
Keep them straight as well.
That's great. Great idea.
Now, can we, this is a little bit off this topic,
sure.
but in terms of extracurriculars mm-hmm. and how that fits into the college application process, I was always asking about music because mm-hmm. my daughter plays the flute, but there are... you know, some schools have sports, some schools don't have sports. How does that all play into the application process itself?
I think one of the most prominent questions I get, particularly from parents when they walk in for the initial consultation with me, is my son or daughter doesn't do 20 different activities. Is that going to be a negative when they start applying to college? And I would always answer with a resounding no, not at all. Colleges aren't looking for the students that have the most activities on their resume. They're looking for students who have committed themselves to certain activities that they really, really enjoy. If a student goes into something or does something just because they think the colleges want them to, it's actually quite clear to the college that that's why they've done it. But if a student plays the flute and has played the flute since you know they were younger and really seems to enjoy it and writes about playing the flute and talks about how they want to be a member of the band or the orchestra when they get to college, that's a positive, and that's something that colleges really, really want to see. It's always nice to have leadership on a resume. So if it is possible to be the president of a club, that's terrific. But it's not necessary. It absolutely is not. When parents come in and say, oh, but little Joey's not the president of the debate club, that's okay. That's not going to make or break a college's decision. Extracurriculars are important up to a point. I think they're important because they show the college that the student has some outside interests. Something that colleges really also like to see are jobs. Students who, after school, go to work.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I wouldn't say go get a job because colleges want to see that you have a job. But my purpose in saying that is because there are students who actually have to work after school. They need the money.
Absolutely.
And they can't join a club, or they can't, you know, be in the orchestra or be in the play because they have to go to work.
I'm thinking about a client in particular that I worked with who was actually working, I think, 30 hours a week, two jobs. There was an illness in the family, and she needed to help support the family economically. So a few of the kids had gone to work to help, but she was still in honors classes and AP classes. And probably, I bet you anything, most of her friends didn't know that she was helping to support, to buy food. You know, but that's I guess you would bring up in the college application.
Of course you would bring it up. You would not only bring it up, but it would be something that the colleges would be very impressed with and very pleased to see that a student had, you know, was out there and working and holding a job. And that's a big positive.
What about community service?
That was my next topic. Community service is one of those topics that you hear a college say, we really like to see students perform community service. So then all these students run out and
right.
go to Costa Rica and spend thousands of dollars of their parents' money to build mud huts. And the colleges then say, well, we don't want to hear about your trip to Costa Rica where you built mud huts because it cost $3,000 for your parents to send you there. That's not something we want to hear about. So they send this kind of mixed message about community service. And I think, again, treating it like any other extracurricular activity. If community service is something that you enjoy and that there are charities that you enjoy being a part of, and they really mean something to you and you're consistent about your involvement in them, then I think that's a big positive. If you are looking for National Honor Society hours and you run around doing activities at all sorts of different places to get them, that's not necessarily something that you want to talk about. If you want to get National Honor Society, that's great. But doing those hours to get National Honor Society is not necessarily a resume builder.
That makes sense. What about during this summer? I always, our kids are working so hard during the school year. I like when children are actually relaxing and getting enough sleep and catching up on sleep and fun in the summer. Is that okay?
Yes, 100%. I think you're absolutely right. As you said, it's stressful enough. The school year is stressful enough. Getting a break in the summer and having enough sleep and enjoying yourself and having a real vacation is a big plus. But the summer is long enough that I think you can do both. I think you can have a chunk of time where you don't have to get up in the morning and you can spend the day doing nothing except lying out and getting sun. And you can also find something enriching to do, whether it's something academic or educational that you'd like to take a course in, or it's a volunteer job that you'd like to try out and do because it might be something that you'd like to do as a career. For instance, I know kids who work for a couple of weeks at following somebody around at Greenwich Hospital just to see if they want to be a doctor.
Yeah.
Things like that. Whether it's working as a camp counselor or working in an ice cream shop. All those things are equally worthwhile and equally just as ranked as high on a college application. When it comes time to putting your activities on your college application, the common application has space for 10. 10 activities.
Oh, okay.
It's not necessary to fill in all 10. and they don't want to see more because they want to see that there are things that you really care about that you're telling them about. And that's really the long and short of it is there are 10 activities that you have the right to talk to them about, including jobs, including your summer activities. And that's really all they want to know.
With regard to the that piece of it, do you go into detail to describe each activity or you're just listing the activity in those 10 places?
So in those 10 places, they give you some room to write a couple of sentences about each activity. If there's one that's been really important to you over the life of your high school life, there will be places within the application that you can write about it. Either it's in your personal statement or it's in one of the supplements that the colleges have asked for. You can discuss that particular activity in greater detail. So you never have to worry that you won't be able to get it in somewhere if there's one particular activity you want to discuss. But for the most part, it's about a sentence or two description of each of the activities.
So is that the space where it says additional information, or is that something else?
That's something else. So there's an actual activity section on the Common Application where there's a drop-down menu where you pick what type of activity it is, then you name it, and then you say how many hours you've worked. It's like creating a resume for the Common App. Some colleges within their supplemental sections say, if you'd like to submit a resume in addition to the activity section, please feel free to do so. Some colleges say, do that even if it's repeating what you've written on your activities. But most will say, only submit a resume in addition to the activity section that you've already filled out if there's additional information that you'd like us to know.
Okay.
The other information section on the Common Application is for very specific things. Typically, it can be for a reason why your grades were not good a particular year, or something very specific that happened to you over the course of your high school career that you want to describe.
So something like if I had a client whose parent was diagnosed with cancer, client whose parents divorced, that would be
the place to put that
okay.
additional information, because there's no other place in the application where they would see that or understand that.
Yes.
And it's important, if it's important to the student,
right,
that the colleges understand that piece of their story, that's where it would go.
So here's my question on that. If a child's grade suffered 1 year or one semester or three semesters because of depression or anxiety prior to treatment, would that be something that a child should disclose?
That's a really tough question. I'm pausing before I answer that because that's a very private thing. And I can understand a student really not wanting to share it. I can also understand a college being somewhat concerned if they read something like that. So my personal view is not to disclose a specific diagnosis like that. Now, having said that, I think there's a place to talk about how a person who was struggling with something and was able to overcome it.
Correct.
That's a very good essay topic without getting into a lot of detail about the diagnosis, to talk about how he or she got stronger over a period of time is something that they probably will be proud of and will want to discuss. And there will be other places to do that other than the additional information where they specifically have to talk about their own mental or physical health.
As you're saying that, and I come from obviously a very different training and background, and breaking the myth of that mental illness is something to be ashamed of or embarrassed by. And what I have found in many of the kids that I work with, that issue that they struggled with in middle school or ninth grade ends up making for a really incredible resume in terms of how they've grown through it and really thrived as a result. Obviously, if in 11th and 12th grade you're still struggling with panic attacks or depression or inability to get out of bed, that's not something you're going to want to focus on your application. But I would say that probably 90% of the kids I've worked with who have struggled when they were younger are at the point where they're probably some of the most active and joyful children at the high school. And because they're so joyful, there's no issue in saying, hey, I had depression when I was in ninth grade, and here's what I did, and here's how I built my self-esteem and became the strong person that I am. So it does tend to come up often in the essay.
Which is exactly the place for it.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. All right. Good. We are going to take a little bit of a break, and then we will be right back to talk about once you've applied. Do you tell everyone where you applied?
Okay.
So this is Beth O'Malley at Be Well with Beth, part of the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour at WGCH 1490.
From the WGCH Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans with your Doppler weather radar forecast. WGCH brings you up-to-the-minute weather 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
We're looking at sunshine, a nice afternoon. The high is 52 degrees. Tonight, we're looking at cloudy skies out ahead of a cold front and a low-pressure system coming out of the Great Lakes. That's going to give us a low tonight of about 47 degrees, and we'll have some rain coming with that system starting around dawn tomorrow morning. This is meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans for 1490 WGCH.
We invite you to listen this Tuesday morning at 9:30 for an enlightening show, Good Living with Michelle Thomas. It'll bring a smile to your face, a few laughs, and the warmth of knowing how fortunate we are. Michelle will discuss topics that highlight good living for those in their golden years and caring for aging parents. We invite you to listen to Good Living with Michelle Thomas this Tuesday morning at 9:30 on 1490 WGCH.
This is Beth O'Malley at WGCH, part of the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour, and I am here today with Hillary Stark of the Greenwich Education Group. Hillary is the associate director
in the college consulting.
So in that aspect of what the Greenwich Educational Group does. So what we're talking about today is college applications, standardized test taking, and really how to get yourself as a parent and your child through the process as stress-free as is possible, which these days is very hard to do. What I wanted to start with a little bit, what I had mentioned is I want to talk about whether or not kids should be sharing with each other, with family members, where they're applying. But before we discuss that, I had a question about EDEA, regular application. So I understand that early decision is different than early action, and early decision is binding.
Correct.
But nowadays, there's early decision one and early decision two.
Right.
And then you can apply simultaneously for early action and early decision one. And if you don't get early decision one, then you apply for early decision two. And it's just getting
it's
mind-boggling.
Crazy. I know. It's adding more stress to
right.
the situation. So I guess the way I like to look at it, every student's different, and every student has different feelings about how they would like to view the college process. Some students, as they visit and start to look at schools their junior year, really come back with a very strong and firm decision on a school that they would like to go to, that they are willing to say, I'm going to commit to this school if they will accept me. Typically, early decision rates, the rate of acceptance early decision, is higher than the regular decision admittance rate. And that's simply because the students who are applying early decision are guaranteeing the college that if accepted, they'll attend. So when the college knows that, they're going to take a decent percentage of that group of students.
So the college would be therefore more interested in a kid who they know absolutely positively wants to come to their
right,
school.
Right. Now, I think it's you have to be a little careful in your thinking on this. They're not necessarily going to take a student who's less qualified than the students that they're typically going to take. You know,
sure.
You still have to have the GPA and the test scores and everything that's sort of within the profile of that school. But again, the percentages that they take are going to be greater. So if you find that school that you absolutely know you want to attend, I always encourage students to apply early decision to that school. It is a wonderful feeling to get into school before Christmas.
Yes.
It's no guarantee, though. So it's very important that before the middle of December rolls around, all your other applications are done.
I want to say this. With the children that I've worked with in town, and every year I probably have 10 kids going off to college. So of those children, it's the ones whose essays are done before senior year starts, and those children who have taken a class or done tutoring for their ACT or SAT in advance of senior year. And number three, those students who apply early decision and have an answer before the holidays. Those are the three, to me, most important ways to relieve stress around the process.
Yes, I would agree with that. I also think that there are more and more schools, as you pointed out, that offer early action. And I actually think it's a very smart thing to apply early action to a school that's not necessarily a REACH school. Now, should I go through what REACH, Target, and Safety schools are, or do you think you're...
No, I would, yeah.
Okay. So there are three types of schools that typically, in this industry, we categorize colleges. A REACH school is a school that really, frankly, is a reach for everybody. That includes all the Ivy League schools, most of the top schools in the country that you can name, the top 10, 15 schools are now considered reach schools, schools that have an under a 10% or less admissions rate.
Everyone talks about the NESCACs as like mini Ivies.
Yeah.
That fits into
Claremont
colleges
the,
in
the
California.
The Williams, Amherst, the,
yes.
yeah,
Bowdoin.
Bowdoin. All those schools are considered reach.
Tufts.
Right, right. You can go on and on. Yeah. There are probably about 15, 20 schools on that list
okay.
off the top of my head that are, you know, somewhere in the 5 to 15% admit rate. And those are typically reach schools for everybody. There are going to be reach schools that have a greater admissions rate for students who aren't necessarily going to be applying to the Ivy League. So everybody has a different reach school. Then there are target schools, which are the schools that really fit nicely in with the student's profile of their GPA and their test scores. And then we don't call them safeties anymore. We call them likelies because there's no such thing as a safety. So schools that the student is likely to get into.
Oh, I love that.
Meaning that their GPAs and scores are probably a bit higher than the average score of their likely schools. Now, when you're thinking of applying early action to some of these schools, I think, one of the best stress relievers, because early action is not something that you're saying I will definitely attend. But one
it's
of the
non-binding.
It's non-binding. So to apply to a couple of target and likely schools that have early action is a very smart thing to do, because you get the applications done, you hear from those schools mid-December, and hopefully if you've done everything right and you've figured out where you really fit, you'll have a couple of options, early action options, to hold onto in your back pocket until you have to tell your one college in May that you're attending.
Right.
It's a wonderful feeling as you're sending out the rest of your applications to know that you're already in someplace that you would be happy to attend.
Yes.
And to me, the best way to relieve stress isn't so much the early decision application, but it's those early action applications that you've applied to for schools that are target or likely schools that hopefully you will hear in December that you're into and have them available to you in May, on May 1st, when you have to send in your acceptance.
You know what? That's brilliant. And that's, I have not heard that before, but it makes so much sense and can really relieve stress for everyone, because then you know that I'm going somewhere.
Exactly.
And it's a decent
school. And
it's someplace
that you like.
Yeah.
Because one of the important things to also take into consideration, we could be talking hours about this and I'm trying to get in what I can, but please, please, nobody apply to a school that they would not see themselves attending. It's not worth it. Don't send in the application. Don't waste the fee. Don't apply to a school just because you know you'll get in if you know you don't want to go.
Yes.
That's the worst thing you can do, because that might be the school you end up getting into.
Yes.
And that's not what you want.
Right.
You need to find schools, and it's a hard thing to do. You need to find schools that you're likely to get into, at least one or two, that you would actually like to attend.
Okay. Thank you. So what's your opinion on sharing with friends and family where you've applied once you've applied?
Well, I think friends to me is easy. Family's a little bit harder, because the family dynamic is, you know, it's something that I don't really – it's not my – area of expertise. I think obviously your immediate family needs to know where you're applying.
Right.
But more importantly, you spend most of your day with friends and with classmates. And that's something that you just really need to be careful about. I think seniors start, even at a big high school, seniors start living in a fishbowl, and everybody's telling everybody where they're going. And it causes the stress levels to go higher and higher and higher. And I strongly recommend that students not talk to their friends about where they're going. And that can be very hard, because their friends think they're snobby if they say, I don't want to tell you.
Right.
So the answer in my mind is to say, and yes, it's a little bit of a white lie, but I think it's worth saying, I'm not sure exactly which schools I'm applying to yet. I'm still working on my applications.
Yep, even if they're all in.
Even if they're all in,
right.
Because I don't think it's anybody's business.
And then secondarily, that the children need to tell their parents, because us moms love to brag and talk.
And
my daughter came to me and said, listen, you don't know this, but you're not allowed to tell people. We don't tell each other. The kids know more than we do as parents. And we tend as parents to, when you see your daughter or son's friends, parents, to start chit-chatting at the concert, you know, and say,
and
where do you guys apply?
What's the first question that you're asked these days, right? It's
yeah.
the first question.
Have you gotten apps in?
Yeah.
Is she applying? Where
yeah.
is she applying?
Yeah. 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 And your apps, that's so smart. If she tells you, don't talk about it.
Right.
Don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very important.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
I completely agree. Now, one of the things that I'm actually going to be doing a whole show on is the financials around college, look, a lot of people think you can't apply for early decision if you don't have the financials in place to say yes. The truth of the matter is, at the end of the day, if it's a financial hardship, you can pull out of an early decision. That's a possibility.
Yes, yes,
yeah.
Yes.
The other one thing I really want to stress is that everybody should complete that FAFSA. And we're, again, I have a group coming in who I've worked with, and I've had four different families work with this group to fill out the FAFSA, because we as parents don't always know the right way to fill it out. And there are some complicating factors, especially in families where there's been a divorce. I've had a few families come in where they had the wrong parent fill out the FAFSA, no financial aid for freshman year. And then I say, wait, what are you doing? Why didn't you use a professional? It's, you know, whatever it costs to do it, it's going to save you thousands and thousands of dollars, and have them go from getting no financial aid to 80% financial aid need-based. Yeah. So that can make a huge difference.
I completely agree. I think the bottom line is everyone should apply for financial aid. They should fill out the FAFSA.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Well, I can't thank you enough for being here today. It's been a pleasure.
It was really my pleasure. I really enjoyed it. I love meeting you, and am happy, if you don't mind, if I'll give
I would. That's what I was going to ask you. If you can give your contact information for our listeners.
Sure. Anyone, please, if you have any questions and you'd like to reach out, my work number is 203-661-1609, and that's extension 110.
And that's for Hillary Stark at the Greenwich Education Group. Thank you so much, Hillary.
Oh, my pleasure, Beth. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Beth O'Malley with Be Well with Beth, part of the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour here at WGCH 1490.
And it's 3 o'clock. The news starts now on 1490 WGCH Greenwich.
A man drove over the curb, hit several people walking along the street, then got out and stabbed several others with a butcher knife.
This is obviously a tragic situation.